From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, July 3rd, 2012. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Manteloking, New Jersey.
In the past few weeks, two companies shared details of who checks in and where. Facebook details the top social landmarks in cities, while Endomundo compiled who is tracking their workouts and where. Is this data valuable to those companies, to marketers, to those of us trying to make sense of the check-in phenomenon? We'll dig into the data and what it means after a word from our sponsor.
National security, cyber warfare, energy independence. These are the topics of the first Geo Huntsville Conference that will be produced by Directions Magazine this November 8th and 9th in Huntsville, Alabama. Formerly the Rocket City Geospatial Conference, this regional event will draw a large audience of senior technologists from the defense industry and the business community. Find more information at www.geohuntsville.com and join us this November.
So let's start with Facebook. And what Facebook did was it aggregated anonymously check-ins made on Facebook or by third parties using its API from when the check-in app launched back in August 2010. And it compiled the top landmarks where people checked in. But it separated out. It did not include transportation hubs like airports and train stations and bus stations. Taking all that data and compiling it, they compiled data on 25 cities, and here's what they learned about the number one ranked landmark across those 25 cities. Seven of them were sports stadiums or arenas. Six were public areas like squares or parks or gardens. Two were amusement parks. Two were concert venues. And two were shopping centers. Now, some of the data made a lot of sense. Like in cities with warmer climates, people tended to check in more at outdoor kind of places like beaches and so forth. Whereas in colder places, they tended to check in more in indoor kind of places. That sort of makes sense. Other things didn't make so much sense. If you look at New York City, the American Museum of Natural History had way more check-ins than its neighbor just across Central Park, the more famous, at least to me, Metropolitan Museum of Art. Now, Facebook didn't try to analyze any of this stuff. It just made a nice infographic and did some summary data. So what I wanted us to do was to take a minute and look at this data and sort of think about what it means or what other questions we might ask. So let me start out with some observations and questions on this Facebook data. My first thought was, do we have any idea of who is doing the checking in? Is it people who are local to the city, or is it tourists? Because I would think if you go to some foreign city and you're visiting, you are much more likely to check in than if you live there and you go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art once a month or twice a month. Just my sort of intuition. And the other observation I will make is that I think it's really interesting that they chose to remove the transportation hubs, because I think people check in an awful lot. In fact, just looking at Facebook and Twitter, I see people checking in airports almost more than anywhere else. What did you see in the Facebook data, Joe?
Well, I didn't think any of this was really surprising. If you check in, there has to be a reason to do it. And we know enough now that there's a possibility that checking in might reveal a deal, a coupon, a bargain, something like that. So does anybody check in to see if their friends are there anymore? I kind of doubt it. I think your observations are right on. The original premise of these check-ins by Foursquare, Facebook, whoever, I think is already passé. It probably never worked in my mind like they thought it would eventually, but checking to see what other people have said about the venue, now that's valuable to me. I think your point about it being tourist is extremely right on, because if I'm a tourist, I'd love to hear what people said about that particular venue, even though we know like the Metropolitan Museum of Art or the Museum of Natural History are well known. You want to go see it. But I'm not there to see if my friends are there. So your point about it being tourists versus locals, I think, is also correct. I thought it was a little disappointing that Facebook, the Facebook study, had no map. it seems like they looked at all these places and did nothing to understand the spatial relationships. Now, removing the transportation hubs would have given you some clue as to might there be more activity related to the proximity of transportation hub. Because if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty easy to get to the Museum of Natural History. I don't know if it's as easy to get to the Met, the Metropolitan Museum of Art. So I would have loved to have seen that relationship.
Right, and I think this was really sort of a half-hearted effort. They could have certainly called up some expert to try to analyze the data. I think that would have been very interesting. Pick a sociologist or a geographer or someone and say, hey, here's some data. Write us a little article about it. I think people would have really picked up on this. This particular study, I did not find picked up across the news media, and I think it's because it was kind of boring.
Nothing there. Well, nothing new. They pay people checking into sports stadiums. Well, yeah, there's a lot of people that go to sports stadiums. And in fact, that may be the one venue where you might want to see if any of your friends were there, because it's such a large area. And if you share commonality with certain friends, you may think, well, did they come to the game today? So,
all right, well, let's move on to Endomundo, which I have to say I had never heard of until they sent me an email to announce that they, in fact, had 10 million users who tracked 32 million miles on their bikes and running and rollerblading and various other sporting activities. So what they did was they compiled all of their data to try to do something sort of similar to what Facebook did and brag about how wonderful they are and to try to give you some insights into the people using the system. These folks are out of Denmark, which is another reason we may not have heard of it. The statistics show that almost a quarter of the users are in the United States. Great Britain and Spain each have 10% of the user base. The rest of Europe makes up 35%. And they're very happy to report there's an 8 percentage point increase in usage over the last year by women. And yet, 75% of users are men and 25% are women. Unsurprisingly, cyclists covered the most miles. They go the fastest. But the most popular sport to track is, in fact, running. 44% of the tracking is done by running activities. And this is a free app, so price is not a barrier here, just to be clear. And this is an app that runs on your device, or you can also use it in conjunction with Garmin devices. And I've got to say, I'm in the running community, I'm in the cycling community. The number of people I know that use these kinds of sites and use these kinds of apps is very small. And for a while there, I was getting a lot of people posting on a site, something called the Daily Mile, which would report how far you ran on Facebook. But I think it got old pretty fast because all of my friends who were posting on Facebook soon after stopped doing that, maybe because their friends got annoyed, I don't know. But the idea here is to create a sense of community, to have your friends support you and support your successes, and even to send you messages while you're out running or on your bike to encourage you on your quest. The most interesting thing to me in this data was the men-women split. I was really surprised that men outnumbered women 75% to 25%, and here's why. It seemed to me that women would be more likely to carry a device like a phone just for pure safety reasons, and therefore they would be more likely to track because they were carrying the phone. So clearly my logic is off on that, and maybe there's something else going on with women, like maybe they don't really want all the gory details of how far they ran and when, and they're just out to go do their workout and be done with it, whereas men, and I'm speaking very broadly, are much more interested in those gory details and be able to brag to their friends that they ran 57.8 miles this week or something like that.
Well, and I think men, to some respect, are competitive in nature. They like to compare themselves to the others as well as track their own progress. I don't know. I would use this app. I share similar thoughts about as you do, and obviously I'm involved in the same communities you are local. I don't know of anybody who uses this app. And I think having been in it, having been in the running community for so long, I have other ways to track my own progress, which is I keep my own spreadsheet. For me to go to a social service, I don't know. I just have a problem. I also wondered about the split with men and women. Maybe is more of a privacy thing. Women may not want to reveal location as well as their own statistics
especially if they run the same route.
Same route.
Regularly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't really need people to know that.
I thought that the premise of the whole site was not necessarily, well, was kind of an end to sell you clothing. You know, they had ads for their own logo specific clothing wear, so yeah, the app is free, but we really want you to buy the sportswear.
Well, the other side, and this was really interesting when we get to sort of the motivation, we were talking about, you know, sort of just tracking, you know, setting goals for yourself, the kinds of things that athletes and sort of recreational athletes both might want to do. The other side of the page, though, opposite the ads for their own clothing, were challenges. And I don't know if you saw this, but basically, people who, if you do the most miles on your bike in this month of June or May or July, you will win a cycling jersey.
Yeah, I have to wonder just how much motivation it takes to do that.
I don't know if that's motivating or not, but it's nice that they're tying in with, you know, the different vendors, and maybe that's somehow they're making money. And this is just one of many of these kind of apps. And I do know that there are people who use them as much to keep track of their own, what they're doing, but also to let others know that they're okay. You know, I'm at mile 12 of my run, and I'm good, and here's a picture of me and my friends. I've certainly been on runs where we stop to take a picture to send to somebody's significant other to make sure, check in, say, we're good. We're good. But I think that's more the exception than the rule.
I would see that a Facebook or even a Foursquare might get into doing something like that for the sports community. These guys are becoming the gorillas. Obviously, Facebook is the gorilla on the block right now. To have a small organization like bringing out an app like that, it's the barrier to get into this is really low. So for someone else who's more popular to adapt this type of side application, I think is probably going to be there.
Yeah. Even if they're tied into Facebook, which this is, in fact, you can log in with your Facebook, and the idea is you would post and so forth. The other half of the question, I think, too, is this whole difference between live tracking, live updating, versus what, again, a different personal experience, what my friends and I do is when you're done with whatever, you report back to your friends. Hey, I just ran the 10K, and I had a PR, and it was a great day, and I hung out with all of my friends, and a picture. Yeah. I'm much more likely to do that than I am to worry about tracking it while I'm, when I'm competing.
Well, and there are other apps. I think MapMyRun is a little bit more popular than this one is to give similar features. I've used that app a couple of times, but actually, after a few times, I stopped using that app.
Yeah. Why?
Again, I had my own way of tracking my own workouts. I guess I never got into it, to using it on a more regular basis. I certainly see the utility. I think it is a very good app. I just never got into regularly using it.
Right. And I guess I should say that, you know, you and I have been running for years, and we probably have more gray hair than some of the folks using some of these apps. So we're a different, slightly different generation, maybe.
Well, yeah, and I thought about that. Maybe that is a generational thing. Maybe it's hitting a different demographic that finds it more popular.
So, yes, folks at Endomondo, let us know. What's the breakdown of ages using your app? I wouldn't want to wrap up this conversation without noting that all is not well in the world of check-ins at locations or for tracking your workouts. We learned this week that Forecast is shutting down. And that's an app I had never heard of until I read that it was shutting down on TechCrunch. And TechCrunch says, Forecast was developed as a service for people to make more sophisticated use of the check-in concept by either letting them check in on Facebook or Foursquare before actually arriving somewhere, or more recently, enabling automatic ambient check-ins once they got there. So this whole idea of making check-ins more useful by saying, I'm going to be somewhere, maybe friends come meet me there, or making it very passive so that you didn't have to actively check in, but once you got close enough, it would automatically check you in. And clearly, that was not working out, and they are shutting down July 1st. And I just read on Friday, June 29th, that Yahoo has decided to shut down Coprol, and that was the check-in app that it bought back in 2010, based out of Indonesia, to get into the check-in space. And apparently, that's not working out either.
I think we have to look at the premise for check-ins. If my purpose was to get a deal, get a coupon, like I mentioned earlier. The manual process of actively checking into any location would allow you to automatically read that on your phone. The passive check-in, although I think we have discussed that the utility is much easier. I'd love to be able to not have to open up my phone, check in, find the place where I'm at. I think now that we're down the road on the check-in process, this is where I think there's some reticence about the privacy issue. Do I always want to check in automatically? Do I actually want to manually do the check-in so that I can read the review of whatever location I'm at? It's kind of like doing product review. If I'm going to a store, is there a deal? If I'm going to a venue like a restaurant, I want to see the review. So I'm more likely to take out my handheld device, check in, and then read about that. The passive check-in, I think, maybe went through a quick cycle that it never jumped the chasm.
Yeah, everybody was very excited about it, briefly, you're right, and then you sort of didn't hear from all of these folks who had implemented it, and it sort of didn't matter. And I think the other thing that needs to be raised is that if in fact the motivation for checking in is some reward, either of a coupon or a free coffee if you're the mayor of the Starbucks, even that I think got old pretty fast. So the checking in, when we go back to why do you check in when you're at the Eiffel Tower or something, I think it's much more about social. It's much more about reaching out to your friends saying, hey, I'm at this cool place, or alternatively sort of bragging to your friends, hey, I'm at this really cool place, or this not-so-great place, whichever. The return on investment in other ways, I think, doesn't really stand up to that. And if your goal is to go after coupons, I think there's an awful lot of other easier ways to do it than to have to rely on a check-in.
Yeah. I think what appears to be happening in the check-in world is we're getting a really compressed life cycle to some of these ideas. We're finding out very quickly about putting an idea up on the wall and see if it sticks. I think the check-in people are really learning very quickly what ideas work and what don't. I think we'll keep watching the Facebook people and the Foursquare people, because they seem to have be putting out ideas relatively quickly to see if one part of their app works versus another.
Right, and they have those huge user bases that make a difference.
To test.
I mean, Forecast, as of February 2012, only had 100,000 users. You know, and I say only, but if you put that in the context of Facebook, that's the drop in the bucket. Well, that's all the time we have.
Must hear directions. We'd like to know whether you're looking to ramp up your sales and close business faster. Our geospatial webinars, produced by Us Here at Directions and Earth Imaging Journal, have an average registration of over 500 attendees, making it an outstanding value. Our proven methodology has worked for clients such as Oracle, Google, Esri, Pitney Bowes, and many others. For more information, go to geospatialwebinars.com.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can send us a tweet @directionsmag. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.